Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We just wanted to let you know that given what is happening in Gaza, Israel, and the West Bank, we are going to focus on that on tomorrow and Thursday's shows. Today, we are talking about the 48th Annual American Indian Film Festival. It kicks off this Friday in San Francisco. It is the world's longest-running film festival showcasing independent films about Native peoples. This year's festival will feature nearly 60 films in the categories of shorts, documentaries, feature lengths, and more. The American Indian Film Institute says its goals are inherently educational to encourage Native and non-Native filmmakers to bring the broader media culture, the Native voices, viewpoints, and stories that have been historically excluded from mainstream media, to develop Indian and non-Indian audiences for this work, and to advocate tirelessly for authentic visual and workforce representations of Indians in the media. This festival is important for many reasons. For one, think about this new report that just came out from the University of Southern California. It found that just one protagonist in the top 1,600 theatrical films from the last 16 years was Native American. That really speaks to the importance of this festival. Several of the films will be available to screen online. You can find the schedule and ticket information at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by three guests. Maitia Zavala is executive director of the American Indian Film Institute. Maitia is Navajo, Laguna Pueblo, Grand Ronde, and an enrolled member of the Fort Peck Sioux tribe in Montana. Through her work at the Institute, she has carried on the legacy of her father, Michael Smith, who established the festival 48 years ago. Hi, Maitia. Thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations to you and your team for another great festival. The films look incredible.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. We're also joined by Brooke Pepian Sweeney. Brooke is a Blackfeet and Salish filmmaker, director of the documentary Daughter of a Lost Bird, and faculty mentor at the Institute of American Indian Arts Low Residency MFA program. Daughter of a Lost Bird touches on many issues currently facing Americans and Native Americans, including cultural identity, tribal sovereignty, adoption, recovery communities, and so much more. Daughter of a Lost Bird will be screened on Tuesday at noon at the San Francisco Public Library. Hi, Brooke. Thank you so much for joining us, and what an amazing film. Thank you for making it, to you and your team.
Thank you. It's really great to be here.
Great to have you. Jonathan Elliott is a Mohawk filmmaker from the Six Nations Reserve in Ontario and director of the short drama Little Deer. Jonathan is also a member of the advisory board for Art with Impact, an LA-based company that focuses on creating and showcasing short films that promote positive representation of mental health issues in schools across North America. And here is the description of Little Deer. On Christmas Eve, 1967, two young Indigenous girls are forced to battle the elements, confront their darkest secrets, and work together in order to return home to their families after a daring escape from the Mohawk Institute Residential School. This harrowing coming-of-age story was developed with survivors of the Mohawk Institute and is based on their real experiences. Little Deer will be screened on Saturday at 11:30 at the San Francisco Public Library. Another incredible film. Jonathan, thanks to you and your team, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, great to have you. So, Maitia, as you know, we have had your dad on many times. We've been covering this festival for so many years. And once again, there are so many incredible films being shown. What stood out for you this time around when you were involved in the selection process?
Oh, so, well, again, thank you for having me on. We are so excited to celebrate our 48th season. It's, you know, every year we get tons of submissions, and, you know, it's similar to a The way my dad explained it, he was like, it's, you know, the festival is like Christmas to him, you know, it's, you know, be, you know, you see all these submissions, they're just wonderful gifts. And, you know, and so there's, you know, so many beautiful films that stood out this year. And, you know, we're so proud of it. And, you know, they focus on a wide variety of subjects and issues and contemporary ideas and you know, just different layers of who we are across the board. And so, you know, we're, you know, excited to present this this year in the festival. And not only that, we're also able to extend a little more out by providing a few more events for our community. And, you know, we have a couple of special, additional special screenings and a fireside chat and funders panel, you know, just to give back to our filmmakers and our community to, you know, to, you know, kind of, grow on a broader educational, scale. And so, you know, we are, we kick off now on Friday. So, you know, there's just so much to be proud of. And so, happy.
Yeah. Well, you, again, really great job. I watched so many trailers. We're going to play a number of the trailers during today's show, and they just bring out so many emotions, joy and sadness and everything in between. Not surprisingly, of course, but really amazing films. Brooke, I wonder what your thoughts are about where we are today and where we've come. I was reading your bio, and your NYU graduate thesis film screened at the 2012 Sundance Film Festival and has TV distribution with First Nations Experience, a PBS affiliate. That was in 2012. So you've seen a lot of change over the past decade. I mean, I'm thinking about the successful Native shows like Reservation Dogs and Rutherford Falls. There are, what's interesting to me is you've got Killers of the Flower Moon, which is a major motion picture that just came out. And we tend to really look for these big blockbusters, which are really important. But like the movies and the festival are just as good, in my opinion. But for people who maybe aren't following the festival or don't know where to look for these films, they might not know about them. So what are your thoughts about what has really changed over the decade when it comes to Native representation and Native films?
Well, I would say that, you know, we are still making films out here. You know, there's a lot of independent Indigenous filmmakers who've been on the quote unquote Indigenous filmmaking scene for years now. And I think it's just that the industry is playing a little bit of catch up, and like not just catch up, but actually like, you know, hoist up and put us front and center. I mean, it's hugely amazing that we've had these shows like Rutherford Falls and Reservation Dogs. But we're still, you know, this big film by Martin Scorsese is by Martin Scorsese. He's not an Indigenous director. There's not Indigenous screenwriters behind it. So, you know, the representation is through, you know, the actors that portray Native people on screen. So there's still a ways to go, but it's certainly a moment in time that I feel like is pretty heartening for all of us.
Right. Jonathan, how do you see it? How do you see this time?
I completely agree with Brooke. I think that, you know, we're living in a time now where, you know, shows like Rutherford Falls and Reservation Dogs are having an impact outside of the Indigenous film community, right? Like these are projects that are speaking to audiences as a whole across the world. And I think that, you know, people are now just kind of starting to see in a public way the types of stories that have been in our communities for so long, the personalities of people who've been in our communities for so long. And, you know, I think it's that desire for a fresh perspective is really driving people to start embracing storytellers from different communities. And because Indigenous people have been storytellers you know, since time immemorial with all of our oral traditions and oral history, I feel like we were kind of naturally inclined to, at some point or another, get our foot in the door and be able to start telling our stories to a wider audience. And, you know, the quality of those shows and the reception that they've had, and the projects that are happening outside of them, you know, here in Canada, we have so many amazing filmmakers who are making absolutely incredible work, you know, on APTN, on CBC, that, you know, it's only a matter of time, I think, before those people are able to take that next step and, let's say, become, you know, those next Martin Scorsese's and be able to get those big budgets and put a proper Indigenous story to the big screen in a way that we haven't seen yet, but in a way that deserves to be done.
It's interesting. While there's so much to celebrate, it's also important to look at the data, because USC Annenberg is out with a new analysis, and the headline is Native American characters are nearly invisible in top films. They found that there's just one protagonist in the top 1,600 theatrical films from the last 16 years was Native American. Overall, less than 0.25% of all speaking roles went to Native American characters across the 16-year study. The percentage of Native American roles did not exceed 1% across any of the years evaluated, even though Native Americans are 1.3% of the population. So, Maitia, what are your thoughts about that? Again, this speaks to the importance of the American Indian Film Festival and other Native film festivals across the country and in Canada.
Well, that was the purpose of the film festival. It was to uphold our representation, to change the narrative of who we are, to get our own people to write our stories, produce our own stories, direct and act. And, you know, over the last 48 years, you know, there's been such a huge dramatic shift in content, and Native produced content. And so it's there. It's just, you know, I like Brooke was saying, you know, the media is playing catch up, you know. I feel like we will get there. It's going to take a while, but you know, the content that, you know, is being produced, which you can see year after year in the festival, is very, you know, is there. And, you know, we are a talented community of storytellers, and, you know, it's, you know, that's the importance of the festival. And so it's just, it takes people to come and support the work of these media makers coming out and being there and being present and listening to our stories. And eventually, you know, we will get there. I believe it, 'cause, you know, in 48 years, you know, since 75, it's changed dramatically. And so, I hope it's not going to take another 48 years, but you know, I believe it's happening. So it will just take some time.
Brooke, what is your experience like as a filmmaker in trying to get funding for the film and then to get, to ensure that it is seen by the most people? I mean, what's that process like?
It's hard. It's a hard process to get funding as a filmmaker, and especially as an independent filmmaker. And I would say that, you know, the funding that I have received for the handful of projects that I've made really feels like it comes from our community. You know, Daughter of a Lost Bird was funded through Vision Maker Media, which is the, you know, arm of corporate public or broadcasting money specifically for Indigenous films, not just Indigenous filmmakers, but, you know, a theme on Native people. And then with my short profile on Lily Gladstone called Far Out There, which is also in this year's festival, that was supported through Firelight Media, who had got some money through American Masters And it was specifically for filmmakers of color. So I feel like, you know, who is supporting me is really, you know, like our brown people that are trying to lift each other up and lift us up through those channels. You know, finding like an agent or representation in Hollywood is certainly still a struggle, especially for me. I don't live in Los Angeles or New York, and I choose to do so because I prefer to live on my homelands in Montana. And so it just creates a layer of complications when you're trying to get your work out there and get a project moving.
Jonathan, what would you add?
Yeah, I think I've had very similar experiences trying to get funding for projects. Thankfully, in Canada, we do have a few, let's say, you know, public government funding grant opportunities through Canada Council, through the Ontario Arts Council and Toronto Arts Council, who've been, you know, big supporters of the few projects that I've produced as well to this point. And now, you know, we also have the Indigenous Screen Office here, which has been incredible. It's really kind of shifted, I think, the paradigm of the Indigenous screen sector here in Canada, because now we have a group who are basically helping to shepherd in the new storytellers here in Canada through funding, through opportunities, through networking opportunities with other big companies. They've had programs with Netflix and Crave and Bell, to start to really expand the sector, because I think, you know, for us here, there have been, you know, only those government funding opportunities, really, unless you start to go from outside companies or if you have a production company on board to help you produce your project. So they're filling in a huge gap in what has been accessible to Indigenous filmmakers previously. And, you know, it's through every stage, too, because for the project Little Deer that we have at this year's festival, we were able to get development funding through the Indigenous Screen Office, production funding alongside all those other grant bodies that I mentioned before, and post-production funding. So they're really helping people through every stage of the production process of creating a film and distributing it. And, you know, previously, you know, they were only established a few years ago. Before that, you know, like Brooke was saying, you really needed, you know, our community and the production companies of other Indigenous people to be able to support you. And now with their support, a lot more projects have been able to come out. I have a lot of friends in the Indigenous filmmaking community here as well, who've been able to get that support for, you know, their first time short films. So it's really trying to, I think the Indigenous Screen Office is really trying to open the door to more of our community members being able to get in there and tell the stories and, you know, tell it from their authentic perspective.
Going back to that study at USC, they found that almost every film, 99% of the 1,581 movies of the 1,600 examined, did not include even one female identified Native character who spoke or was named. And they said that Lily Gladstone's role in Killers of the Flower Moon is an anomaly in Hollywood. And she's receiving praise for an incredible performance. But again, it's very rare to see this. And it just needs so much more attention that these numbers, this study that just came out. So you mentioned, Brooke, you're the director of the film about Lily Gladstone, Far Out There. And I want to play a clip from that documentary. In this clip, Lily Gladstone shares with us how her foundation and making her voice heard as a professional actor shapes her career and her understanding of her role in this industry.
Rarely do I find a Native character that's allowed to just be on screen as a human being. With wants, with fears, with nuance, with complexity, without them saying something about basically a Western perspective on colonization. I feel like a lot of what I strive for in my work is about Having a strong sense of self as an individual is a good starting point. But it is the starting point. It's not the end point.
And that's a clip from the documentary Lily Gladstone, Far Out There. This film will screen as part of the Women Leading the Way program on Sunday at 1:30 at the San Francisco Public Library, part of the American Indian Film Institute. Brooke, it was so interesting to hear in that film that Lily Gladstone thought she was not going to get the role in Killers of the Flower Moon. And at that point, excuse me, she even considered leaving the arts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, back to that study from Annenberg, you know, when you can't work in your profession, you start to think about doing something else. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of in the same crossroads of, well, if I can't get this next project off the ground, you know, I mean, is this kind of all for naught? It can be incredibly demoralizing when you feel you have the talent and you feel you can do it, but there just isn't the opportunity or there isn't the role. And, you know, Lily is such a great talent. I'm so thrilled that, you know, she's having her moment, but in a way it's like, you know, she kind of had a little bit of a quote unquote moment, I think it was in 2016 when the film Certain Women came out, and her performance was having its own kind of buzzy moment. And here it is 7 years later. You know, why didn't Lily have more roles? Why didn't that happen? And I think it was because it was before this moment of really, you know, putting the keys in our hand to drive the car that is like a film or a TV show. And, you know, I just really hope that that continues in the future because we can do it. You know, we can tell incredibly moving, hilarious, stories. There's just a wealth of what we can do.
Have you been in touch with Lily lately? Because I've just wondered what a wild ride this has been with her. I was just watching the Sundance Q&A, and on the at the table was Lily Gladstone, Leonardo DiCaprio, Martin Scorsese, and Robert De Niro. And so now Lily Gladstone is walking in these, you know, these rooms and these spaces with a lot of, it's overwhelmingly still white men, very powerful white men. And I imagine that's just brings up so many emotions for her, and then also pressure because she's opened the door. And like you said, why has it taken so long for her to get a role like this? But then also, what's going to happen as a result? Are, you know, De Niro and Scorsese and DiCaprio, these very powerful people in Hollywood, going to say, all right, it's time for us to fund these films, but step aside and really let Native people tell their stories? I mean, the Osage were heavily involved in this film. Some people say they did a great job. Others have criticism of the film, and we're going to do a show about that in the coming weeks. But what are your thoughts?
What this
moment means, like what do you hope will come of this? And it's unfortunate that it takes something like this to change it, but that's how these systems work.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it, you know, like you said, it is like really Lily's chance to jam her foot in the door, and hopefully in so doing, we'll get a whole host of other folks who are able to, you know, step right up behind her. You know, but like to rewind back a little bit, you know, we have had some indigenous representation, you know, in the Academy, especially with Taika Waititi. I mean, here's a Maori filmmaker from New Zealand who is, you know, really representing his narratives in a lot of his work, and also, you know, able to do things that kind of transcends any kind of pigeonholed narrative. And I really think that, you know, with Lily's probably very likely Oscar campaign push that's going to come, and I hope hope to God that she wins it because she deserves it. You know, that we'll have, you know, it's just back to this like hope, you know, I have this hope, but there's also this real fear about, you know, what has happened with the writer's strikes, what are happening with the actor's strikes, that, you know, there's like whispers of, you know, this kind of sort of TV that we've been experiencing in the past 5-6 years, that some of those opportunities aren't going to show up again, and that there's going to be some tightening of belts. And, you know, I just hope in the belt tightening that, you know, we aren't overlooked again. And it would take, you know, more of a film historian to, you know what that looks like. But, you know, we haven't been represented in film hardly at all. Not just like now. I mean, I don't think, you know, we've moved the dial really that much. And we have a lot more work to do. And it's certainly, you know, with advocates out there like Lily, and, you know, all the other amazing Native filmmakers who are in positions of power, that we can get it done.
Brooke Pepian Swaney is director of Lily Gladstone Far Out There. It'll screen Sunday, 1:30 at the San Francisco Public Library. Brooke is also director of the documentary Daughter of a Lost Bird. We'll talk more about that film after a break. We're also joined today by Jonathan Elliott, director of the short drama Little Deer. We'll talk more about Little Deer also after the break. That'll screen Saturday at 11:30 at the San Francisco Public Library. And Maitia Zavala is executive director of the American Indian Film Institute. The film festival kicks off Saturday and runs through November 11th. Some of the films will be available online. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow and also on Thursday, we will get an update on the assault on Gaza and discuss the surge in settler violence happening in the West Bank. The Guardian is reporting just recently, at least 47 bodies were recovered after a blast at a Gaza refugee camp. So we're going to get the latest tomorrow. Today, we are talking about this year's American Indian Film Festival. It is the longest running film festival showcasing independent films about Native people. You can find more information, ticket information, find information about all of the films that'll be screened from November 3rd through the 11th at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation, what are your thoughts about just Native films, where we are today? Have you seen any Native films lately? What stood out for you? If you're a Native filmmaker or an artist and you'd like to join the discussion about what it will take to ensure that films get the funding that they need, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Jonathan Elliott is a Mohawk filmmaker from the Six Nations Reserve in Ontario and director of the short drama Little Deer. This harrowing coming-of-age story was developed with survivors of the Mohawk Institute and is based on their real-life experiences. Brooke Pepian Swaney is a Blackfeet and Salish filmmaker and director of the documentaries Daughter of a Lost Bird and Lily Gladstone, Far Out There. We're also joined today by Maitia Zavala, executive director of the American Indian Film Institute. Maitia is Navajo, Laguna Pueblo, Grand Ronde, and an enrolled member of the Fort Peck Sioux tribe in Montana. So let's talk about the opening night film, Maitia. It's called Bones of Crow. It tells the story of Cree matriarch Aileen Spears, who survives a childhood in Canada's residential school system to continue her family's generational fight in the face of systemic starvation, racism, and sexual abuse. Wow, this looks like a pretty intense and very important film. Why did you choose this film to kick off the festival?
The director, Marie Clements, is an wonderful, wonderful filmmaker who we have supported throughout the years. She has produced many features of shorts, music videos, and you know, she came out with this brand new feature, Bones of Crows. And once you see it, you know, it sparks so much emotion, you know, and you know, the talent, you know, it's throughout is some of, you know, the First Nations finest. You know, you got Grace Dove, Michelle Thrush, Glenn Gould, and the cast just goes on. But that the film is currently up for numerous nominations, including Best Film, Best Director, and the acting awards. And you know, you have to see it. It's like I said, it's very emotional, very powerful. You know, it focuses on the residential experience and, you know, what occurs after that, you know, for generations after that, you know? And so there's a lot of emotion that it will evoke from an individual. And so, you know, we'll have tissue boxes on hand, but you know, it's an incredible movie to see along with, you know, all the other films in the lineup. But you know, we're extremely happy to, you know, open the festival with Bones of Crows at the De Young Friday night, November 3rd.
Friday night at 7 p.m. Let's hear part of the trailer of Bones of Crow.
His Excellency would like to ask if any of the residential school survivors would like to take this opportunity to be heard by His Holiness.
My mother would like to speak in her language.
Aileen Spears, Nisikasun, Nya Oste, Cree Nation.
My name is Aileen Spears. I am from the Cree Nation in Manitoba, Canada.
And things are too good. I'm just scared that things will be taken away.
I want my children home where they should be.
It's the law, Matthew. You'd go to jail if you don't sign. Think of the education they will receive. If it wasn't for the church, a residential school system would never exist.
We have 324 students that will keep them in a state of malnutrition.
And if you want to motivate the Indian, you must starve him.
Naturally, we're seeing a rise in sickness.
Be careful. You're going to see things you'll never forget. You got to keep it inside you.
You didn't think your master's...
That is part of the trailer of Bones of Crows. It is screening this Friday at 7 p.m. at the De Young Museum in San Francisco. It is kicking off the American Indian Film Festival. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. Jonathan, your short drama, Little Deer, also focuses on the residential schools. This is about two young Indigenous girls who confront their darkest secrets. They work together in order to return home to their families after a daring escape from the Mohawk Institute residential school. And this film was developed with survivors of the Mohawk Institute and is based on their real experiences.
Yeah, this was a project that I've been working on with the survivors for several years. There's a really amazing group of survivors from the Mohawk Institute, which is based in Brantford, Ontario. It's the first residential school that was established in Canada. It was the longest running as well. So it was established in 1838 and ran until 1970. So over the course of all those years, there was well over 15,000 students from my community of Six Nations and about 67 other communities all around Ontario who attended that school. So I've worked on several documentary projects with the group of survivors that were advisors and helped to create this project. And what we thought that we wanted to do was continue to educate people about those experiences, because it's obviously a huge moment that impacted our entire community and Indigenous communities across Canada and the U.S. as well. But for us in particular, there were things that, you know, through other documentary projects, that we felt like we could expand upon. And something that we knew we wanted to do was to combine elements of a lot of their stories to talk about their shared experiences in a single film that was easily accessible to younger audiences and people who don't really have a lot of introduction to what the experience of residential school survivors were while they were actually attending the schools. So we came at it from a basis of education. You know, we want this film to reach younger people and to reach, you know, audiences kind of around the world to be able to talk about those experiences of what they went through and, you know, not necessarily focusing on the trauma of things. You know, that's an inherent part of the story, but also to focus on how our people are very resilient and how we were able to heal through those things. And, you know, it was 2 years for us to kind of really figure out, like, what exactly do we want the story to be? How do we want to tell it? Whose story should it be? So when it came down to it, I worked with six survivors, but the backbone of the story about these two girls running away to try to make it home to their families for Christmas was based on my cousin, John Elliott's personal story, because he would do that every year over the 5 years that he was a student at the school. And, you know, that was something that I, you know, he would basically have to walk for 6 hours in the cold, in the snow, cross a frozen river that was very dangerous. And sometimes it wasn't fully frozen just to make it home to be with his mother for the holidays before he would have to go back to the school. So telling, you know, my family's story, but also being able to bring in elements of everybody else's story was really powerful. And I think it was healing for a lot of us because they were on set. They were, you know, these survivors were working with me on the script at every stage. They would say, this is what we want to include. Don't include that, you know, really helping us to tell the story the way they wanted it to be told. So the whole process was very, very rewarding, very moving. And, you know, ultimately the movie is about friendship because I think throughout all of their experiences and working with several other survivors from schools across Canada, on other projects, that was a common theme that, you know, I feel like hadn't really been discussed too much in media that I've seen talking about the experience of residential school survivors is, you know, it was the bonds that they created with other students who inherently understood what they were going through without having to really, you know, talk about it because they were kids and they would be punished if they talked about it with each other. But, you know, it's having that support system of other people who are going through the same thing you are. And with the survivors I worked with on this, many of them are still best friends to this day, you know, 60, 70 years on with the people that they met there. And that was, you know, it was that message of hope and it was the message of healing and, you know, the perseverance of our people and the strength of our people to be able to endure, you know, some of those worst experiences that you could ever have as a child and find peace and healing as an adult, you know, all those years on.
Wow. Amazing story. Well, thank you so much for your work. I know we have to let you and Maitia go. I hope you can see Little Deer. It'll be screened on Saturday at 11:30 at the San Francisco Public Library. And if you're interested in Jonathan's other work, he has been involved in so many important films. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. Maitia, Films will be available online for those who can't see them in person or maybe don't live in the area?
Yeah, there'll be a collection. Not all the films are going to be available, but yes, there will be a collection of films that will be available beginning November 3rd through the 11th.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, Maitia Zavala is executive director of the American Indian Film Institute, and Jonathan Elliott is a filmmaker and director of the short drama Little Deer. Jonathan, thank you for this great film and all of your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great pleasure to talk to you all.
Thank you. And Maitia, again, huge thanks to you and congratulations to your whole team for putting on another great festival. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And joining us for about 15 more minutes is Brooke Pepion-Sweeney, director of the documentary Daughter of a Lost Bird and Lily Gladstone Far Out There. Before we talk about Daughter of a Lost Bird, let's take a call. Let's go to Brad in San Francisco. Hi, Brad. Thanks for holding.
Competitive ball to the next level. Hello?
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air. And if you can turn off your radio.
Yes. Sorry.
Thank you.
Oh, I was not that. It was something else. I didn't have the radio on. Oh,
okay.
I
simply wanted to suggest or ask if there's any possibility of two subjects for two future for different future films. One would be a more accurate and a clear biography of Tecumseh, which is a forgotten name, I know, and I know it's historical, but uniting all the tribes into moving forward with a very significant movement at its time. And the second is the Cherokee Nation bringing to the Supreme Court a lawsuit that they won to not have them moved off their land. I think they'd be very, very important for people to see, and it would attract a very wide range audience. And if you don't mind my ending, which I always do, free Leonard Peltier.
Well, thank you so much. Uniting all tribes, you reminded me of what happened at Standing Rock, because so many tribes came together, some for the first time in so long, and so many films and documentaries were made about Standing Rock. Thank you for those ideas. Brooke, there's so many stories that need to be told.
Right? There's a lot.
Right.
And there's a lot that the American public, you know, doesn't know, you know, aside from history. I mean, you know, there was a study done recently through Reclaiming Native Truth, which is a part of this media organization, Illuminative, where I think like 90% of Americans don't know or believe that American Indian / indigenous people still exist and that we are a part of modern society. And that is such a shockingly bad number that, you know, no wonder we have such an uphill battle to tell our stories if everybody thinks we're gone. You know, it really plagues us, and, you know, there's more work to be done.
Right. Well, thanks again, Brad. Maybe we'll do a few shows about your ideas. Let's spend some time talking about this incredible documentary, Daughter of a Lost Bird. It touches on so many issues: cultural identity, tribal sovereignty, adoption, recovery communities. Before we talk about it, let's play the trailer. This is Daughter of a Lost Bird.
When I was adopted, the agency had said to her, be careful. If someone like saw her and was like, that's a native baby, you're white, you shouldn't have her. Somehow she was terrified someone was gonna try to take me.
Okay, now I'm gonna take you and your mama.
I was adopted at birth, and at 6 years clean, I got two letters. One was from my birth mother, and one was from my birth father.
Hi, April, this is Kendra Potter, your birth daughter. I don't know if leaving a voicemail is too weird.
I knew that I was not capable of doing anything but bringing her to her parents. I was afraid that I would create more questions for her than provide answers.
I was so far from who that was, and I'm so grateful you weren't a part of any of that.
It's taken a long time for me to believe that I belong places. You know, when someone says, you're Lummi, it's very hard for me. I can't wrap my mind around that. I don't know what that means. What I know is that I'm Chattis Gatum's daughter.
This desire to be recognized as Native, but what is Native anymore? Like, if you are a Native American person living in an urban environment who has never set foot on any kind of reservation, knows nothing about your culture and heritage, what is that Nativeness? What is it? I don't know. I'm not saying that there's not a right to want it, but it's elusive. It's elusive.
And if we don't know who we are, we can't do anything about it.
That's That is the trailer for the documentary Daughter of a Lost Bird. It will be screened on Tuesday at noon at the San Francisco Public Library as part of the American Indian Film Festival. Brooke Pepian Sweeney is the director of Daughter of a Lost Bird. So the voice we heard there in the beginning was Kendra Milichuk, an adult Native adoptee who was born in 1980 at the cusp of the enactment of the Indian Child Welfare Act. And she's on a journey to reconnect with her birth family. How did you first learn about Kendra's story?
Well, we, and this is also in the film, so a little bit of a spoiler alert, but we made a short film together, and I started to learn about her personal history, that she was adopted out and raised by white parents. And, you know, as an actor, she was being put up for these Native roles, and she was getting more and more uncomfortable with claiming an identity that she wasn't sure she had the right to claim. And certainly this is a topic that is pretty salient currently. With a lot of people claiming Native heritage who don't necessarily have that heritage, it becomes quite a complex issue when you have adoption thrown into the mix and, you know, sometimes no paperwork to verify that you come from an Indigenous nation. And so we decided to figure it out. You know, what, you know, was she Native? Where did she come from? And, you know, I was there as her friend to help her, and kind of naively was like, well, it can't be that hard to figure it out. But here we are 10 years later, and we've found her birth mother. You heard the second voice was her birth mother, April, who was amazingly open with her own story. And they've reunited, and I'm happy to say that Kendra is a member of her tribe, the Lummi Nation.
Wow. Well, like you said, this is getting so much more attention. People are writing books about this. And then, of course, there's a lot of pain right now happening in the Native and Indigenous community with the article out of the CBC about Buffy St. Marie. Who's the real Buffy St. Marie? What sort of reaction did this film get from people who have similar stories? Because so many people have a similar story to Kendra's.
Well, I think, you know, there's some universalities in having a question about where you belong. And I think that doesn't just limit you to being an Indigenous person. You know, anybody who has some sort of disconnect personally with their heritage, I think that that can be a profound question of belonging and knowing and these foundational identity issues. It's not unique, right?
Right. Right. And then also just learning about your own history and how to deal with that and all of the emotions that that brings up.
Right. Well, and I mean, it gets down to nature versus nurture questions and, you know, how much do your genes play a role on who you are as a person? And, you know, these are kind of central to a lot of questions just as a part of being a human. Where do you fit
right
in the whole scheme of things?
I can imagine you're getting probably an incredible response to this film from people with similar experiences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes after a screening, you know, people will come up to us and either share their journey reconnecting with family or feeling disconnected from a group or, and it's certainly, you know, in modern society, where you're disconnected from, you know, some cultural traditions, whether you're from, you know, the Lummi Nation, or if you're from Syria and you grow up in America, you know, it can be similar, and not to equate them because I that's not the same, but there's some similar things that can happen.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, Brooke, but I would love to have you back with Kendra, possibly, because you're right. So many people can relate to this story. And it's really such a beautiful documentary, and I hope that it is widely seen. And you've already received a lot of acclaim for this documentary. It was the winner of the New York Women in Film and Television Award for Best Female Director and Documentary at the 2021 Woodstock Film Festival. So congratulations to you and your team. It's really an amazing documentary. Brooke Pepien-Sweeney is a Blackfeet and Salish filmmaker, director of the documentary Daughter of a Lost Bird. It'll be screened on Tuesday at noon at the San Francisco Public Library. Brooke is also director of the film Lily Gladstone, Far Out There. That'll be screened Sunday, November 5th, 1:30 at the San Francisco Public Library as part of the American Indian Film Festival. Thank you so much for your great work, Brooke. I'm so glad that we were able to bring you on the show today, and we'd love to have you back.
Lem Lumps Pesia, and it was my pleasure. And I hope you all go out and see those films.
Yes, we will. Thank you. And some of the films will also be available online. If you can't make it in person or if you live outside of the area, you can find information yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Jennifer Yoshikoshi for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. You can find all of our past shows at yourcallradio.org. You can raise awareness about this festival. I remember when we first had Michael Smith on, we talked about how the festival wasn't getting any media attention. That has changed, but it still deserves so much more attention. Really, these films are just so amazing. In fact, we didn't have time, obviously, to talk about some of the other ones, but there's a great film called Rosie about a young orphaned Indigenous girl who's forced to live with her street smart aunt. That's in program 4. That one looks absolutely incredible. And this little girl is just adorable. Her story is incredible about how she became an actress. And then there's another film about the history of Indigenous fire. And it's just so important given what we're dealing with here in California. So a lot of films, please raise awareness about this festival. It kicks off on November 3rd in San Francisco. Find more information, yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.